And this was true of economic power, which is where he focused his attention. And he always believed that economics should really be political economy, and that antitrust as a discipline in economics, of course, given his beliefs, was the area that he concentrated on. Mm-hmm. And so he knew that his strength was in writing. He was a good writer, and he was a good teacher. And it wouldn't be in administration. That's why he refused to even think of staying on in the presidency. Mm-hmm. But his loyalty to Michigan State made him agree to accepting that interim position, where the university was really in turmoil. Were you here at that time?
No, I was at Central Michigan right at that time. I began in 1968. I graduated in high school. And I was
just at
the beginning, and I was there. I had a low draft number,
right.
And then I got drafted at the end of 72, right at the tail end of the Vietnam War. So I wasn't familiar with what was going on here, and then I came to Michigan State in 78.
I
missed all that. But it
was amazing what was going on here. Mm-hmm. And of course, Hannett resigned or retired just like that. Mm-hmm. And consequently, and Walter really felt when the Board of Trustees contacted him. And the Board of Trustees was very divided. It was on political lines. It was political lines. The Democrats wanted him, and they were in the majority at that point, and the Republicans were against him. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Hanna was happy to see him named. Mm-hmm. In fact, I know he wasn't. But Walter recognized his own strengths. He knew that he wasn't an administrator and cut out for administration.
Yeah.
And so, but he could operate in that tense situation of the moment. I think he did very well. But as a routine administrator, that was not his own strength. And he was lucky enough to recognize it. I was teaching full time when he was in the presidency. So I really wasn't aware of a lot of what was going on. Mm-hmm. My students never knew that I was the president's wife. Mm-hmm. They never knew that.
Mm-hmm. They didn't make that connection.
No, and Adams is such a common name, and mm-hmm. and I never said anything to indicate that I was. And
it wasn't on the syllabus, so then.
Yeah, it wasn't in the syllabus, and I.
It's interesting. I know we've talked before about a little bit about his war career, and.
Yes.
Did he talk at all about the war, or
not that I remember.
Not so much about the Vietnam War, but I'm thinking terms of
what
you mentioned about his he wasn't afraid of the crisis.
No, he wasn't.
I mean, he'd seen his combat experience. He'd seen other things.
Yes.
But at that time, do you recall him saying anything or making any allusions? Well,
no.
he didn't fear students, perhaps, because he'd seen
a
real enemy.
Yeah. Well, but he didn't fear students at all. He was, I didn't fear students either. And I'll give you a little personal example. One day, I was going out of my office on second floor, in Bessie, down to my classroom, which was on the first floor in Bessie. And as I left the classroom, a colleague, that's all I'll say, a colleague said to me, "Where are you going?" I said, "I have a class." Meanwhile, there was a demonstration going on in the halls of Bessie on the first floor. And this colleague said, "You can't go down there. It's dangerous." I said, "It's not dangerous. These students are demonstrating, and they have very strong beliefs, and they're carrying on, and I know that there's a demonstration down there, but I'm not afraid of them. I'm going to class." And that colleague went back to the office and locked the door. That colleague was afraid. Mm-hmm. I never was, in part because of my background. I came from a college that was very radicalized, and I went to college from 38 to 42. It was in New York, it was in Brooklyn, New York, mm-hmm. and those students were very radical, and we had demonstrations like that all the time. We used to yell at our teachers. I mean, once the police that were outside my history classroom were lining up getting ready for what we used to call County Fair Day at Brooklyn College. They were getting ready because just before noon, they were under our window. Well, we were having a normal history class, American history class, with Professor Moraes, I remember. And all of a sudden, the police come charging into the room. And they said, "What's going on here?" Well, we didn't understand where they were coming from. I mean, this was a normal class that we were having. Of course, we drove our professor out of the profession, but anyway, he could no longer take it. But so I wasn't disturbed. But you see, someone who didn't have that experience, I could see what that person would be. Mm-hmm. So that was a funny experience.
In your husband's writings on economics, was there any book that he considered his best work that he was most proud of?
Gee, that I can't answer.
Okay.
I will say that a text that he did is going into its 10th edition now, so he could consider it successful. But I think one of his earliest books called Monopoly in America, The Government as Promoter, it was one that he was very proud of. In recent years, he felt that all his articles was not making the impact on the profession and the society that he wanted. And by this time, he was collaborating with a former student of his, James Brock, who's a professor at Miami University in Ohio. He decided that he'd take an economic topic and write it up in play format. So his last three books, the last one of which was he finished just a couple weeks before he died with Jim Brock. And they put it in play form. The whole thing is in play form. And I think he enjoyed doing it. He did three of those books. And he did a lot of writing. He was a very good writer, but it didn't come easily to him. But he took great pride in his writing style as well as.
Did he involve you at all in any editing or any testing ideas?
I proofread with him. So I would proofread through things, and sometimes he'd discuss things with me, but I can't take any credit for any contributions to his work, and vice versa. He can't take any credit for any contributions to my work. Yeah.
Going back and looking at some of his, also considering some of his attitudes toward the university, the broader university, might be also his attitude towards sports. What was it that you saw that maybe got him interested as much in that?
He was always interested in sports. He went to Brooklyn College too. We met at Brooklyn College, even though we went to the same high school. We didn't know each other in high school. Mm-hmm. But he at Brooklyn College, there were no sports. I mean, Brooklyn College was a whole different world from any university you might be aware of. And I think he missed that, although at that point he was very interested in professional baseball. He knew the Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers, he really was a devoted fan of, and knew every player and followed, listened to every game. I mean, it was a whole way of life. When we were at Yale, we went to all the hockey games, nearly got clobbered on the head with the hockey stick of a visiting team. And the first thing he did, the very first thing he did that we, when we arrived in East Lansing, is to inquire where he could buy football tickets and basketball tickets. We used to go to wrestling, you know, they used to have prize fighting here at Michigan State. We used to go to all those prize fighting bouts and take my little boy and neighbor kids. And he was always interested in sports. Mm-hmm. Winning was secondary. but he was always interested in sports that I knew.
Did you share that love of sport, or?
Well, I can't explain it. I always enjoy doing things with him. On my own initiative, no. I was, as a kid, I played a lot of street games, which we played in Brooklyn. A lot of games, like stickball and Russian seven and stoop ball and things that I'm sure you didn't hear of in Michigan. But I always played enjoyed being active. But I didn't pay attention to any other sports. But of course, we did things together. See, it was a different time in life, and I had a wonderful, wonderful marriage in that we were both able to pursue our own interests and yet be together a lot. It was, I can't explain it when I look back on it. It's a very interesting relationship, very, very satisfying. Mm-hmm. And I would go to a lot of sporting events just because you go, and I would be going to a football game, and I still go now. I've been to every home game this season. Mm-hmm. The crowd would fascinate me, and the band would fascinate. Well, he loved the band. Mm-hmm. He just loved the band.
What did you see as maybe the early source of his interest in the band, marching band? Was it the director? Was it students? Did he have an interest in music?
I think it was the whole idea that here you have a group of young people all working together as a unit. It was that whole idea of a group working towards a common end and sort of erasing themselves as they became part of a whole. And it was that loyalty to a group and to a disciplined group and a willingness to do it, I think, that attracted him to the band. He himself was the most unmusical person you've ever met. And this is a true story. When he was in the Army in 1943, in his Army camp, one day the post band came to play for, you know, the raising of the flag in the morning and the taking it down at night. It didn't come over loudspeaker. There was a band there that played. And he saw a classmate of his from Brooklyn College who was in the band and had a directorial position in the band. And he said to Walter, "I can get you in the band. What instrument do you play?" And Walter said, "I don't play any instrument." The guy said, "All right, I'll put you on the
cymbals.
So Walter joined the band and got him out of a lot of miserable stuff in that army post before he was sent overseas. Well, at the first time they had to play the Star Spangled Banner, he came in the wrong place with the cymbals, and the officer in charge of the post said, "Who's that cymbal player? Throw him out of the band."
Oh, no.
He said, "If only I had come in right, I would never have gone to Europe. I could have stayed here." But that's
interesting.
That, and my son was a percussionist, and he was very active in the band, and he loved the band, and he was in his high school band.
Uh-huh.
And we, of course, as devoted parents, attended all the sessions of that high school band, as well as, of course, the Spartan marching band. So, I don't know what attracted him, but he just loved the band, and he would go and listen to them practice. He marched with them, as you know. He was, when they went to the Rose Bowl, he just loved the band.
Mm-hmm. In talking about some of the coaches that he had any relationships with in particular that stood out that you recall? Football, basketball,
none hockey. That stood out. I want to say that, for instance, again, that was a part of his relationship that I wasn't necessarily a part of. Nick Saban, the present coach, was extremely thoughtful when Walter was very ill. I didn't know him at all. And obviously Walter didn't know him well because he came just recently and he wasn't someone from Michigan State. Mm-hmm. But he called, he would want to find out how Walter was, and he told me how highly he thought of Walter. Walter would go and sometimes watch the practice. Walter always stayed at the entrance to the dressing rooms when the team at the end of a game came through. He would be there and he'd congratulate all of them. Didn't matter whether they won or lost. And Nick Saban was unbelievably thoughtful when Walter was so sick and when he died. Mm-hmm. And I was very impressed with that. As you know, Walter had this relationship with Bobby Knight, which he struck up in a very odd way.
How was that?
Well, this was when Michigan State, you know, when all the basketball games were over in the old Jennison gym. And we would go to the games and with a group of friends, and we'd always sit directly behind the opponent's bench. And if you knew Jennison, did you know Jennison?
No, I didn't attend.
Oh. Well, that the bench was so close to the players' benches. I mean, where we sat was, well, it was closer than the end of this table.